Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Kirk Martin, founder of Celebrate Calm, America's Calm Coach. It is Wednesday, April 13th. We're broadcasting live from beautiful, sunny Nashville, Tennessee, about 70-some degrees out. And I can tell it's spring because the allergies are hitting right now. But we're thrilled that you're here with us. Got a lot of great topics to get into. And I'm going to lead with a really difficult one just because it's kind of top of mind and it's something that I know many of you struggle with. Got this email from a really great mom, and she says, what do you do? How do you handle it when someone close to you is just lashing out at you? How do you avoid taking offense? How do you handle it when they're intentionally trying to tear you down and doing mean things? How do you keep from getting hurt? And so in this case, it was the mom, it was her husband, who's just lashing out at her. And so here's how I would respond to that. I'd say, one, mean, degrading comments are going to hurt. There's no way around that. Being calm, using our approach, doesn't mean that you're a doormat. It doesn't mean that things don't hurt. They are going to hurt. You will feel disillusioned and confused. Because how can a person that you're so close to, or how can any person say such things to you that are degrading and demeaning? Now, this isn't easy, but one of the first things that I try to do and the first responses I try to take is this. I try to get inside the head of the other person, because otherwise I'm going to be so caught up in my own emotions with this. I actually try to get inside the head of the other person because I want to feel what they're feeling, and I'll show you why. How miserable inside must your spouse be to say such things? Think about that friend that you have, that acquaintance at church or at work, that person that you know who's continually just going after you. There's no way to make sense of it, because you know in your heart, well, I couldn't say something like that. But think, put yourself in their shoes. What ugly things must be happening inside of them for them to say such things? What kind of internal torment must your husband be experiencing to be able to say such mean things to you, to his wife? And I try to go there because it helps me kind of understand and see this in a little bit different situation. I can't process this in a rational way. It doesn't make sense. And I have to go to mercy. I have to look at this is a person who is deeply hurt and miserable inside. And part of the reason I want to do that is because I can't always process it from myself, and I don't want to take this on myself. I want to immediately counter feelings of, well, did I do something to deserve this? Because there's nothing that you can do that deserves these comments. I don't want moms, I don't want any of us struggling with, well, what did I do to cause this? Well, the truth is, it may be nothing. You've done nothing. It just might be a person who is so deeply hurt and miserable inside that this is their way of dealing with it. So I have to detach myself in some way to say, you know what, that isn't really my husband speaking. That's his father speaking. Maybe that's the way his dad treated him. Or maybe you're married to someone who's struggling with alcohol or something else. You know what, that's the alcohol speaking. That's the pain speaking. That's the regret speaking. And I can honestly use this with my kids sometimes when they just lash out and say things that I know they don't mean. Well, that's just the hurt speaking. That's the frustration, the anxiety speaking. I know with Casey, when he gets upset and I hear that tone come out, immediately inside, here's what I say to myself. Uh-oh, he's struggling right now. He is either overwhelmed or anxious, because that's what it sounds like when he's speaking like that. And it helps me get to the root of the issue of what's causing it. It's not me, and it's not you, mom or wife. It's your husband. It's that pain and something else speaking. That's him trying to control me because he feels so out of control. I don't want to respond with my own hatred and my own bitterness, or else I become just like him. I don't want to allow his words, his pain, his regret, his anxiety to turn me into something that I don't want to become. Now, I do want to pivot here, because I can show mercy and I can say, hey, that's not the man that I married. That's not the child that I have raised and loved. And I want to pivot here and say, I want to show self-respect. And this can take many forms, from the very humble to the extremely assertive, depending on his response and kind of where you are in this process. So it could be something where you say, honey, do you realize how much those words hurt and tear me down? Do you realize what you're saying? How would it make you feel if someone said that to you? Now, some of you, where you are, that's not going to make a difference, because they're way past that point, and you know that. But I will tell you, as someone who has gone through this process in their own marriage, which is me, and was continuing to be refined every single day, I know there are things that I did to my wife I didn't realize I was just being a jerk. I'll give you one example, and this is very personal, but I used to say it. A couple things. She would say something, and because I couldn't deal with conflict well or negativity well, I'd just say, oh, honey, it'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Well, what I was really saying was, you know what? Your opinion and your viewpoint isn't important right now, and your point isn't actually legitimate, because, don't you know, it's going to be fine. It's just going to be fine. Well, I was just delegitimizing what my wife was trying to tell me. I was shutting her down and basically saying, oh, you know what? This discussion's over. We don't even need to talk to it. Your fears are unfounded, because it's going to work itself out. Well, that was wrong of me. That was me trying to control the situation, because I couldn't control myself. Sometimes I've been prone to saying, oh, you know what, honey, you're just projecting, you're just, you know, that's what you think, but that's not how I think. And again, what I'm saying when I've done that is, your opinion isn't valid, and I'm shutting down this argument right now because I can't take it emotionally. Totally wrong of me. And I needed to hear, hey, honey, don't you know those words, they hurt me. Don't you know that those words, when you say it like that, it makes me feel like my opinion's not valid. Well, I needed to hear that. Now, what are some other levels of assertiveness that we can bring to bear here? Here's another one. Hey, honey, I'm committed to our marriage, but I will not sit here and allow you to speak to me that way. I have too much self-respect. If you want to speak to me respectfully and work out our issues, I am all ears, and I will give all my energy to that. But if you are going to try to demean me, I refuse to give you that power over me. In fact, you have every right to speak to me that way if you want. But I promise you, if you continue to do so, here are the consequences of you speaking that way. You will lose your wife, and you will end up losing your family. Now, I would, in this case, Mom, I would probably request firmly that he go to marriage counseling with you, so that you can work these issues out with a professional present, because it sounds like it's far beyond an issue where a husband just doesn't realize maybe he's saying some things that hurt. It's something where it's coming out and it's deeply offensive, and you need some extra help. I would also seek out support. You need to continually find support and encouragement from many sources. Find moral support from friends who can counter these negative words with positive ones. Find spiritual support from your pastor, from your rabbi, from a woman's group, from your own prayer time with God. Change your internal conversation. You need to counter his negative words with your own positive internal words. I refuse to give power over my self-acceptance, over my dignity, over my emotions to hurtful words. I am kind. I am generous. I am intelligent. I am a great mom. I am a good person. I have a great future ahead of me. I am learning. I am growing. I am excellent at what I do. Counter that all the time with your own internal conversation. Don't let his negative words become your internal conversation. Depending on where you are in the process, you may want to seek the help of an attorney in order to protect yourself and your kids. I know this is ugly and you don't want to do it, but in this kind of situation, you have to begin documenting things that are said and done, how it impacts the kids. It's not where I want to go, but you have to do it in order to protect yourself. See a therapist, a counselor, who can help you with these things as well, who's kind of right there in your community. And finally, remember to control what you can control. You cannot control the words that come out of anyone else's mouth, but you can control yours. You can surround yourself with a support system to counter the negativity. You can proactively talk to a therapist and an attorney. You can proactively talk to yourself and create this new internal conversation. You can pray. You can seek the guidance of spiritual mentors. You can be kind yet firm. You can be assertive and show self-respect even when you can't always control the person, the other person. So with that as a kind of a jump-off point, I want to start answering some other questions that we've gotten over the past couple weeks. One was a very, you know, common question. What happened to change the way that you started to parent Casey? Because we have a lot of new people joining us all the time, but if you don't know, I spent the first 9 or 10 years of Casey's life, my oldest son Casey was 17, just going after him, screaming at him, trying to control him. And you know what? I was a pretty good dad, like most of the dads out there. I was a good dad. You know, I was involved. I was trying to help. We're helping him learn how to, you know, ride his bike and be involved with him. But I noticed he was always going to my wife for help and just talking to her all the time. And it really, in many ways, kind of hurt me. And I finally went to my wife and said, honey, what's the deal? Why is he always coming to you? And she was like, hey, you big freak, have you ever noticed out that you're always yelling at him? He can't come to you because, you know, he has to manage you and your emotions. And the truth is, I had to control my son, my wife, everything around me because I couldn't control myself. I had so little self-control. I was so focused on just holding myself together with all of my anxiety, and I'm very type A, and I'm very driven. Everyone around me had to manage me. I put my son, to my shame, I put my son in the position of managing my emotions. He had to know, well, what kind of dad am I getting coming home tonight from work? Is he going to yell at me because there's Legos on the floor and tell me that I'm lazy and undisciplined? Or is he going to play with me in my Legos tonight? He just didn't know. And so I did a lot of damage, and I saw that happening, and there was this little voice in my head that kept saying, maybe instead of trying to change your son and everybody else, you're the one who needs to change. And when I finally got a hold of that principle that I can't change anyone else, but I can always change myself, I have control over one thing in life, and that is myself. And when I do that, it gives me an incredible amount of power in my life, because now I don't have to rely on everything going just the right way for my day to go well. In fact, I can plan on the fact that every day I'm going to face at least 3 or 4, if not 10 things that disappoint me, that could throw me off. But instead of feeling powerless, instead of getting angry and resentful and saying, you know what, after all I do for my kids, for my wife, for everybody else, and they can't even blah, 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 instead of getting resentful, or instead of feeling out of control, like how dare they cancel on me? How dare this happen? Can't they see that I'm a busy person? Instead now, I'm in a place where I can control my own emotions, and now I tend to, watch how this works, instead of needing everybody else to be calm and everything else to work out just right, now I can walk into a situation, I create the calm wherever I go. Instead of my environment changing and controlling me, now I can change the environment, not by controlling other people, but by controlling myself. And I'll give you an example of this. I had a did some workshops this week, past weekend at a homeschooling conference, and met a lot of really great people. And this really neat mom emailed me right after the workshop the next day. It was really, really cool because she said, "Hey, my husband and I had like a 6-hour drive on the way home after the homeschooling conference. We listened to the first 4 parenting CDs, and here's what we noticed on the way home. And when we got home, we changed the way that we acted and reacted to our kids." And this is a family with, I believe, 4 kids, 2 special needs kids, autism, Asperger's, a lot of things going on. And they said it was really cool because we didn't go home and try to change the kids. We changed our reactions. And here's what she just, and we emailed back and forth, and she said, when we began changing our behavior for just a few hours, our children's behavior improved dramatically. And it gave them hope to see that their kids can change, that their behavior can change. And the final thing she said is, we're not doomed to live with grouchy, unhappy, intolerable teenagers, you know, throughout the whole teen years. Now, the caveat I would give you is, you know, your kids are going to be grouchy sometimes. They're going to be unhappy and sometimes intolerable. They're going to do things that you can't always, that you're not always going to like. But the truth is now, you are getting the power now to handle that. So even when they are grouchy, you don't have to be grouchy. And you will notice from whether your kids are 2 years old or 17-year-olds, they react to us. They feed off of us. Excuse me. It's really, really kind of a, it's really a cool, cool thing. So here's something interesting. After this past newsletter, one of the newsletters, a parent wrote in and say, "What do you mean get to the root of the issue? What does that mean?" And so one of the really cool things about what we teach, and I can't go through it all here, but I'll give you an overview, is this. Traditional behavior management says, if I see a behavior that I find annoying or irritating, I put all of my energy into changing that behavior. But here's where we go wrong, because we only treat the outward behavior. We treat the manifestation of the real root of the issue, which is just what we see on the surface. And we always use the example of an adult at the workshop who has he hasn't eaten all day. He gets to the workshop. Well, after a while, if you haven't eaten, you get irritable and your stomach starts rumbling. And if I just look at someone in our audience and say, "Hey, Ralph, you better cut out the rumbling stomach, because if you can't control your behavior, leave my workshop." Well, if I do that, that's not going to change the behavior, because the irritability and the rumbling stomach is only caused by the internal issue, which is he's hungry. And so we teach there's 3 primary needs our kids have. There's a need for order and structure, because many of your kids just don't have a lot of internal structure. Their brains are just wired in such a way that they're very free-flowing, lots of ideas floating around, great imaginations. And we've got videos on the website at celebratecalm.com that illustrate some of this. But when you have a brain like this, you tend to be disorganized and forgetful. You tend to struggle with executive function, with writing down your thoughts, getting them out of your head. Kids like this tend to be controlling and bossy. They tend to have some obsessive compulsive tendencies. They carry little things like little acorns and stones around in their pockets. They're little planners. They're always asking, "What's the plan? What's the plan? What are we doing? What are we doing?" Often eliminate unknowns, so they're eating the same food, they're wearing the same clothes. They enforce justice and fairness a lot. Things must be just so. They're kind of like little attorneys, cops, and judges all wrapped into one. they struggle with anxiety because anxiety is caused by unknowns and things you can't control, and they already feel like they don't have a lot of control inside, so they try to control other people and situations. You'll see lots of defiance come from here. So that's kind of our first column that we look at, the root of the issue. So when I'm seeing some of these things, instead of just saying, why does he have to be so bossy? Why does he need things just to be just so? I can go to the root of it and say, oh, he just needs some order. He just needs some consistency. It's part of the reason he might be asking why all the time is he's looking for some order. I mean, I want to know the big picture. I want to understand it better. We also talk about sensory issues. And many kids who struggle with aggressive behavior, who are bouncing off of things, bouncing off of people, trouble keeping the hands to themselves. These are kids who have sensory issues. And unless we meet the root need and get these kids some exercise and help them with physical pressure on their bodies, they'll have this manifestation. And just saying, well, you know what, he's being really aggressive, he needs to stop bumping into other kids and wrestling with kids all the time, it's not going to happen until we meet that need in positive ways. And then the final column that we look at is kids with understimulated brains. Don't get enough dopamine, don't get enough blood flow to the brain. The brain is understimulated. So all of the fidgeting that we see, the arguing, picking on siblings, a lot of oppositional behavior, a lot of doing things the hard way when they should just do it the easy way. It's all just a child seeking to get stimulation for their brain. So I can react to them picking on siblings, but it's not going to change anything. I can give consequences all day long. It won't change anything in the long term until I realize they have some internal needs that need to be met. And so you take a 5.5-year-old boy who's having trouble keeping his hands to himself during transitions in school. Well, I can say no, no, no all I want to this child, but we always have to say yes to something instead of just keep your hands to yourself. Well, this is too vague. It's just telling them what not to do. He's going to do something to it with his hands. So can I switch this around? What can I say yes to? Can I ask this child when they're about to make a transition to go do something with his hands, to carry something in his hands for me? Maybe he can carry some heavy books, which is great for sensory needs. It's great at providing shoulder stability, which actually helps in the writing process. Can I give him a little sensory strip to play with just so he can rub on something? You can see sensory strips on our website. We've got a video that shows those as well. I have teachers that give kids a specific activity to do while they're making a transition. So with some kids walking down the hall, she throws popcorn up in the air, only it's not real popcorn, it's fake popcorn. Or it might be fake cotton candy, and she's throwing little balls of cotton candy to the kids, and they have to catch the cotton candy balls in their mouths. It gives them something to focus on instead of continually just saying, Jason, I've told you 13 times to keep your hands to yourself. If you do it one more time, you're going to miss recess. Well, I can guarantee you on many, many days, he's just going to miss recess. And we're going to do it again and again and again. And part of the problem that we have and what we're addressing in the newsletters this week is this tendency that we have as parents and teachers, just as adults, to assume the worst. Sometimes we assume that the kids are just being difficult on purpose. Well, why can't she just do her homework because she's smart and she knows the answer? You know what? She's just being defiant. She's just being difficult. And see how that comes out of us so quickly? We just assume the worst instead of stepping back and saying, you know what? Maybe instead of assuming the worst, maybe assume the best. Maybe she's really, really bright, but she's overwhelmed or she's anxious. And here's the real tragedy of what happens. We are so busy and we don't have time or we don't take the time to think these things through. And so we immediately just come back with, she's just being defiant. She's just being difficult. When in reality, here's what we're missing. We're missing our kids screaming out to us saying, Mom, I don't want to be in trouble all the time. Why do you always have to say I'm defiant? Why do you always have to assume I'm being bad? Sometimes I am, but most of the time, Mom, I'm not. I don't want to be labeled a bad kid. Why do you always assume I'm being defiant and difficult? Mom, I'm really just overwhelmed, and it's too much work, and I'm frustrated, I'm anxious. Don't you know how hard school is for me? Don't you know? I want to talk to you. We don't have time because we're rushing around so much, and we've got to go here, and we've got to go there, and everything has to be perfect, and everything has to be in a rush. I need time to talk because I'm getting picked on at school, and I'm having all these things happen. You won't listen. And if we could take the time and hear that, we would hear kids continually crying out saying, I need some help. I need help. I don't want to be like this. But our kids, they don't know that they're overwhelmed all the time. They don't know to say, Mother, as a matter of fact, the reason that I'm not doing my homework is that I feel very overwhelmed because sometimes I just get too much work and my brain can't process it all. And it's too much, and so I just shut down. And when I shut down, I get this really defiant look on my face and this defiant tone. But, Mother, it's not really defiant. It's just anxiety. And I'm also a perfectionist as well. They don't know to say that yet. We have to find that out. And we have to take that extra step to assume the best and to step back and to control ourselves and think, why? What is going on? Because no child in their rational mind wants to continually be labeled and be in trouble. But I will tell you, and I wish, you know, if you come out to the workshops, I know you're stressed out. I will give you a hug, and I will give you encouraging words all day long, and I am all about that. But I will tell you that the hugs and the encouraging words only go so far. At some point, you have to make a decision. You have to draw a line in the sand, and you have to say, I'm going to be different. And it takes a few different forms. For some of you, it's going to be saying, I want to be different. I'm going to be different. Our lifestyle is going to be different. I refuse to give in to what society is causing me to do, to run around, to live this life where the only thing I think about are my child's behavior and their grades, thinking that that's what's going to make them successful in life. Well, the truth is, even a Harvard study showed that grades have limited predictive value of success in life. Grades are great predictors of how you are going to do in school, but at some point you get out of school and you have to go into real life, and you have to know what are the traits that are necessary for success in life. And I'm telling you, we've worked with thousands of families, and so many families in our society are focused on building the wrong skills. And we're focused on doing what everybody else is telling us to do. And meanwhile, our kids' gifts and passions are atrophying. They are not being used. Our kids lack confidence. They lack a vision in life because we're focused on the wrong thing throughout most of their childhood. And instead of building these other traits, instead of building confidence and leadership and initiative and risk-taking and building their imagination and coming up with new ideas and problem-solving, we're focused on making them be like everybody else. And that's where we have a curriculum. It's called Courageous Parenting. If you want to know more about that, just ask us about it. We've got information on the website. It is a phenomenal tool to refocus you on what's really important so you can spend the next 10, 12, 15 years of your child's life focused on the right things. And I'm telling you, coming from someone who has a child who is 17, going on 18, who's about to leave the nest, we did a lot of things wrong early on. We focused on the wrong things for the first 10 years of Casey's life, and it had pretty dramatic consequences. But it's not too late. For the last 7, 8 years, we focused on the right things. We focused on building the right qualities. So we have to do that, and we also have to make another very difficult decision, and it's this. We have to look inside of ourselves and say, you know what? It's not really just about my kids. It's not really just my spouse. It's not really my boss. It's not really the traffic or politicians or the economy. It's not everybody else. The common denominator is me. I have way too much anxiety. I have so much fear inside. I let little things control me. I'm at my wit's end. I don't know how to handle these situations, and I need help, and I have to get control of my own anxiety first, because if I don't, I'm just going to miss out, and I'm going to assume the worst all the time. So if that is you, get the help that you need, whether it's through Calm Boot Camp. And by the way, a quick little note for my Calm Boot Camp friends. I want to tell you, I am in awe of you, of what you're going through, because we're going through this intense, intense 35-day program. And the emails that I would get, I'm going to share it with the boot camp friends this weekend. We're going to go through a lot of really, really deep stuff, some personal questions. It's hard work. Some of you, you are wrestling with things that you have struggled with for 40 years, with things from your childhood, internal conversations that have dominated your brain and your heart. You are coming to grips with things, and it takes a tremendous amount of courage. And so I want to encourage you to keep going. And this is not easy, but it is so worth it. Okay, here's another question. 12-year-old, just came off of spring break, says he's feeling sick. And you know what, his dad, you know, hubby, just says he's faking it. And, you know, he just needs to get with the program here. So a couple things. I want to address what dad's saying here, and don't mean to pick on dads today. It's all of us here. But first thing I would say is I don't control other people's feelings. Other people can have any feeling they want. In fact, if my wife, if my kids, if anybody around me, if they want to be grumpy, they can be grumpy. Here's the distinction. It's just they don't have the right to tell me how to feel. They don't have the right to tell me what kind of mood I need to be in. You can be grumpy all you want. You can be angry if you want, but just don't expect me to be grumpy and angry. I'm not going to be that way. Your mood doesn't get to determine my mood. Now, I will have compassion on you and sympathy with you and empathy, and I will help you out. But at the end of the day, your mood doesn't control my mood. And sometimes people just want to be in a certain mood, and that's fine. They can be in that mood. I'm not walking around trying to control other people's feelings and moods. I control mine. But here's the second and more, in this case, probably more important part of this, is the dad says, oh, the child's just faking it. He's not really feeling sick. Well, the truth is, in this situation, I believe the child is feeling sick, but it's not a physical sickness. It's anxiety. The child was just away from school for a week. Now he has to go back into school. It's probably someplace where he feels anxious socially. He may have trouble making friends. He may have trouble connecting with other kids his own age, because most of our kids are old souls and they just struggle with it. They are great with adults. They're great in the adult world. Often great with younger kids. Often really good with animals. Your daughters, most of them, they're great. That's why horse therapy, or just being around horses and animals, are great for them. They're great with that. But connecting with other kids, kind of tough. Some of your kids sitting all day long in a classroom is really difficult. Some of your kids struggle with their outward behavior and they get in trouble all the time. So I don't want to go back to school. And then some of your kids, it's just the classwork. It's just hard for them. They're very bright, but it's just kind of difficult. And so, of course I'm going to have anxiety going back into that situation. So watch, if you see this after breaks, it's because they got out of the rhythm, out of the mode, out of the order and structure of going to school every day. They had this week off of school, and now they've got to jump back into the situation. So always counter anxiety with known things, with knowns, with very specific, concrete things. I would, even before your child has a break, say, hey, talk to a teacher, assistant principal, hey, after break, is there something my child can look forward to? Is there a job they can do the first day they come back to school? Is there something you need done? Because I guarantee you, if I were a teacher and this were my 12-year-old student, and I even sent a note home or told him before break, hey, Brandon, remember, when we come back from break, you know what, that first day back, I'd like you to class. Could you get here like 10 minutes early? Because we're going to start this new unit of study, and I think you could really help me out with this. I really need one of your talents. In fact, over spring break, if you wouldn't mind, if you have some time, I'd love for you to build something with your Legos or draw something on some poster board, because we're going to have this new unit of study. We're going to be doing the Civil War. And so if you want to draw a cool battle scene, pick out just some Gettysburg or something, if you want to do that for me, I would love that. That would really help me out. Because now your son, over spring break, he's got something to do. It's not homework. It's not an onerous project. It's something he likes doing, drawing, making a battlefield out of his little army men, whatever it is. He has something to do. And now the first day back at school, he gets to take in this poster, this project that he did. And it just helps alleviate the anxiety a little bit. This is part of what we try to help teachers understand is a lot of the issues you're seeing in your classroom, they don't have anything to do with defiance or kids shutting down or being obstinate. They have to do with anxiety. Anxiety and sensory issues probably cause more issues in our school than anything else, more than ODD, more than ADHD, more than behavior issues, more than conduct disorder or all these other things we call it now. Anxiety is just killing our kids. And so one of our passions is helping parents, teachers, and students to be on the same page. And this is a really cool thing. As far as I know, we've studied this. In fact, I do know this. We are the only organization in the whole country, perhaps in the whole world, that can do this on the same page, that can train teachers in a separate in-service training session for teachers. And I will tell you, teachers love our training because, one, we don't use PowerPoint and we have fun. Teachers laugh at our training, but more than that, they walk away with concrete, specific tools that they can use every day of the year. And so on the same day or spread out over a couple days, we can train teachers, and the kids are back in school. Casey conducts a school assembly, and then at night we do a parents' workshop. That way we begin the school year with parents and teachers and kids using common language, talking about who are you controlling? Oh, I can only control one person, it's myself. We go through dozens of behaviors, and now when the teacher sees a behavior, she and the teacher and the parent can say, you know what, I'm seeing this behavior, but I think what's really going on is your child's struggling with some anxiety, or your child has a sensory issue, or you know what, he's getting in trouble in class, but you know what he's doing is when he's done with his work, I think maybe he's bored and his brain needs to be stimulated. Now we have everybody on the same page. Imagine how much better the school year goes. So this is a one-time thing that we're doing. In all honesty, here's what's happening in the organization. In the month of March, we were on the road for 24 straight days. We conducted over 30 workshops during that time period. I can't do it anymore. You know what? I can do it. I'm not doing it. I'm drawing a line in the sand and saying, we're not traveling this much anymore. So we're going to have fewer workshops, but we want the workshops to be bigger. We want entire school districts involved when possible. We want some of our best workshops are when two or three elementary schools in an area team together, and then they get a middle school or high school to join, where we'll have a group of Catholic schools within a certain diocese start to get together. And so here's what we're doing, but I need you to take action. Right now, before the workshop fees go up, because they are going to go up dramatically, they're going to go up to where they should have been all the time for these workshops. If you do this, if you email and call by the end of April to start to get this process rolling and reserve a date and start this working, we're going to give you 50% off the fall workshops. The benefit to you is obvious. You get 50% off. It's a great savings, and it makes it worth it because we will train 200, 300, 400 people on one day, and it's a great thing. But where it helps us is then it helps us lock down our fall schedule early, helps us with travel, helps us just with everything and planning because I have a high need for order and structure myself. So knowing right now where I'm going to be on November 3rd, probably on Long Island, it's just very settling to me. I can start to plan things out, and it's just really helpful. So email us. You can call 888-506-1871, and we'll be really glad to help you out with that. So let's move on here. Another question. What about when my son acts more mature than my husband does? My husband plays with my son, but then he gets competitive with it. Well, I would tell you, this was me. I used to provoke Casey. And here's the reason I think I was doing it sometimes. Sometimes I did it because I wanted the reaction from him. I couldn't control myself, but I could get a reaction from him. And for some reason, I got some measure of satisfaction from that. And it was like knowing, like, it was like I was playing on this field where I was in control. So I'm the adult, and he's 7 years old. And so I'd provoke him. And I was getting some satisfaction from that. But you know where it really came from? It was really my immaturity. And we are largely very flawed people. We just are. I am. You are everybody else. There were lots of hurts and lots of pain. And for many of the men out there, they didn't have a father who walked them through this, who necessarily modeled some of this for them. And they were just kind of beaten down, both, you know, verbally, you know, maybe metaphorically, maybe even physically. And so they don't know how to do this. And I didn't know how to do that. And so there's a lot of immaturity in a lot of the men that I work with. I was and here's the dichotomy. I was a really successful person. I could run a decent-sized company. Many of the men that I work with, they're very high-level executives, but they're really immature emotionally, and they don't know how to do this. They don't know how to control themselves. So that's why I want men attending the workshops and listening to things like this and listening to the radio show and reading the newsletter, because the thing that we teach men is this. Men aren't all that concerned about all that love and all those things. But you know what we do want is we want respect. And what we teach husbands and men is this. The quickest and most effective way to get respect is not to control other people. It's not to come into home, start raising your voice and yelling and demanding and controlling your kids and making them do things. That doesn't get you respect. That makes people fear you. Casey used to fear me. He was afraid of me because he didn't know when I was going to lose it. He didn't know when I was going to bark out consequences that were really harsh. You know what really he didn't like? He wanted to please me. All kids love their moms and dads. They do. But he didn't know what he was going to get with me. And you know what he feared most? He just didn't want to disappoint me. But the truth is there was nothing he could do to please me. My expectations of him, I had 40-year-old expectations of him when he was 7 years old, and I have to watch it even now. He's 17. His life is very much in the moment. Kids' lives, they're not thinking 30, 40 years ahead of like many of us are. Now, Casey, to his credit, does. I mean, he's a very deep kid, and he's got long-range written plans, but that's because we've, you know, worked with him so much and helped him get that vision. But your kids, they live in the moment, and they don't want to disappoint us, and Casey didn't want to. But I was always yelling at him. And so when I started getting control of myself, he began to respect me. And I'll tell you what he sees most. He has watched me, and he saw in the first half of his life a man who was completely out of control, who couldn't control himself when we went out to dinner, and I didn't get the right meal. I couldn't control myself when I missed when I missed my exit. When there was a traffic jam, I would just grumble, and he'd hear the F-bombs and curse words coming out of it. But no, I taught him, you need to be a fine Christian young man, and you need to watch your mouth, and you need to control yourself. And when other kids do things, you need to be patient with them. But I wasn't that way. And now he spent the last half of his life watching me in those situations. And I will tell you, we travel a lot, and we hit some difficult times. And he watches, and he studies. And you know what he'll tell me? He'll say, Dad, I saw how you handled that. That was really cool. And inside, I just about cry because I know I'm making up for a lot of lost ground and a lot of bad mentoring that I did. But inside, it feels good because I know I'm building something deep inside that kid. I'm not giving him an excuse to behave poorly anymore. I did before because he could just say, well, Dad, it's not the way you handle it. And now I'm not giving him those excuses because he's seeing it. When I mess up, I apologize to the person I messed up with, and I apologize to my son and say, Casey, I didn't handle that well, and here's why, and then we do it the right way. So I will tell you, for the men in here, I want every dad, one of my passions is getting them to listen to the Defiance and Disrespect CDs. in that package of four CDs, there's this one CD specifically titled Straight Talk for Dads, 10 Ways to Get the Respect and Authority You Want. I will tell you, though, it's not only good for dads, it's really good for moms. It's one of my favorite CDs. Here's something we want to offer special for people listening to the radio. Our CDs require an investment, because if you want to change your life, you have to invest the time, and you have to make even an investment in it and say, we're drawing a line in the sand. For those of you listening to the radio show, just email us, and email this in the subject line, Calm Radio. And when we get that, Brett will send you out a special link, a special additional 25% discount on any of the CDs that you want, and that's from listening to the radio show, because we want you to have the tools, but we need you to make the investment as well. Okay. Another question here. Kindergarten age boy. A boy on the playground called him stupid. My son reacted and threw mulch back at the child. The teacher didn't really hear, you know, the whole thing that happened. She just knew, you know, the son threw the mulch back. She had the child run two laps as a consequence. What's your reaction to that? Okay, immediate reaction is fine. There needs to be a consequence for the fact that he threw the mulch. That's definitely fine. I gotta watch what I say. Don't necessarily blame the child for throwing the mulch back at the kid, to throw him stupid. Not that I don't blame him. I'm just saying, it's pretty normal. As a parent, I wouldn't be too feeling guilty or wrapped up in like, oh my gosh, my son threw mulch or he wrestled with a kid at school. It's pretty normal kindergarten age thing to do, and actually pretty much any age for little kids in elementary school. Little boys wrestle. They do things like this. But here's where I want to put my time, because you know what? Walking two laps is a consequence. That's fine. You've got to do something. But it's not really going to change anything, because it's just a reaction to his outward reaction. Here's where I want to put my time. I want to teach your kindergartner, hey, guess what? Over the next 5 or 6 years throughout elementary school, other kids are going to call you stupid. Some kid is going to push you. They're going to call you names. They're going to do irritating things. Kids are going to get in your way. You're going to take a football to school, and some kid's going to take your football away from you. Stuff's going to happen to irritate you. Your brothers and sisters are going to do that to you. People all around you. So here's my question. What do you want to do differently? Because if you react in the situation, if you react by throwing mulch or calling a name or pushing the child down or grabbing something out of his hands, you're going to get in trouble. And if you're reacting, you're giving that other person power over what you do. And so what do you want to do differently next time that happens? Spend your time giving your child tools, but it takes time. And it takes kind of being in a very calm kind of place and a thing where you're doing something with your child. Don't just sit down and say, okay, you threw mulch, you're in trouble, we're going to sit and we're going to talk about what you should have done differently. No, I'm going to do it in a much more casual part of, this is teaching, this is kind of, this is just life, what we're doing it. Make this teaching a part of your everyday life. You know, one of my favorite tools to use in teaching kids is to offer up my own issues. And I used to do this with kids who came to our house. For those of you who don't know, we did camps in our home for about a decade. We had about 1,500 kids with all kinds of just different issues in our home. And one of my favorite things to do with the kids while we were sitting playing with Legos was I would relate examples from my own life and say, guys, here's an example. We were traveling. We were on the road, and this happened in the hotel or happened out at a restaurant. Here's how I reacted, and it was kind of a bad way. What could I have done differently? Ask your kids, say, hey, I've got this issue at work, or I've got this issue with this mom is saying some things behind my back. What do you think I ought to do? What's a better way for me to handle that? Get your kids actively involved just in everyday life, problem solving, thinking of different ways that they're going to handle this, and let them see you doing it differently. That's where I want to spend 95% of my time. If you do that, now watch this. This is really cool. If I equip my child with tools so that he knows how to handle this situation next time and he handles it in a positive way, then there won't be any consequences. So consequences are reactive. If I'm giving too many consequences, you know what that really tells me? I haven't equipped the child with tools to handle situations in a more effective way. It's just reactive. So think about this and just everything that you're doing, and it's really, really helpful when you do this. Okay. Here is a another question. Let me relate this one to you because we're coming up on time here, and I want to relate this one to you because I think it's really, really cool. I had this boy, and it was actually my mom the other day at the homeschool conference. She said, "Hey, I've got this son, and I think he kind of has high-functioning autism, but loud noises and just lots of noise really bother him. And, of course, he has sisters who enjoy making noise in order to irritate him because it's just they can get the reaction from him." So one of the things we teach kids and adults is you counter noises. It's the discordant noise. It's the noise that's kind of irritating and harsh-sounding. I counter that by creating my own rhythm because the truth is I can't always control my sisters, other people around me, and sometimes there's going to be noise. So the first thing you can do with kids who struggle with this is, one, you get earplugs, you get headphones, let them listen to music while they do things. That creates rhythm in the brain, blocks out some of the sound. But I teach kids how to create a rhythm inside their brains, to start singing a song inside their head, to tap on their legs, to bounce, to tap their feet, to create rhythm inside, to counter that lack of rhythm, that discordant noise on the outside. And we play games. Casey and I have a game we play all the time where he'll say, "Dad, guess which song I've got in my head right now." And the game is, if I guess which song, he gives me a buck. You know, it's just kind of a fun game. But what I encourage is, play this game with your son and say, "Hey, I want you to start singing a song. You can even sing it really loud, but you're singing it inside your head, not out loud. Go inside your head and create the song. Make a game and start to create a habit of this." And I teach kids what Casey teaches kids through the Straight Talk for Kids program is, if you're going to react to your brothers and sisters and classmates, you're giving them power over you. And what this mom told me is, "Well, my son's really oppositional." Here's a huge principle. Use that oppositional nature to your advantage. If I know that he's oppositional, I know that he likes to fight things. But what I want to teach him is this. I'm not going to fight people. I'm going to fight circumstances, and I'm going to use that fight to overcome obstacles. And so my language to him is going to be, "Hey, you know what? When your sisters make noises and you respond to it, guess what? They're controlling you. You're their puppet. You're just a powerless person. Do you want to surrender to your sisters?" And in a child like this, he's going to say, "I don't surrender to anybody." And if you like making jokes about certain people, you can say, "Hey, you know what? You don't want to be like, I'm not even going to go there." But anyway, certain cultures, they just surrender all the time. Certain nations and certain wars get run over because they surrender all the time. You can figure out that one. But I told the mom, "You know what? Have a white towel. And every time this child is about to lose it or get upset because the kids are irritating, the sisters are irritating, just hold up the white towel, you know, the towel of surrender. Or maybe a scorecard, because I want to start keeping a scorecard in a way, letting him know, hey, that was cool because your sister started to irritate you, and instead of reacting to them, you controlled yourself, you went inside, and I'm going to guess that game." And the mom can give a prompt when the sisters start getting noisy. Instead of always trying to control their behavior, which is what we all do, the sister's behavior, I look at my son and say, "Hey, what song is playing in your head? Let me guess." And now you're teaching him, I can't control other people, but I can start to control myself. And when he starts doing this and he doesn't surrender and he wins, make it a big deal and teach your kids to control themselves. It's really, really cool. Okay, a few other questions that we got. One is, "Hey, Kirk, can I borrow your CDs? Do you have them at library somewhere? Can I just borrow and listen to them once and give them back?" No, and here's why. It's not a money issue. It's an investment and it's a time issue because just listening one time defeats the whole purpose of doing this. It's not just this is long-term transformation that we want. It's not like, "Well, I'm just going to read this book one time, and it's just going to tell me what to do, and then I'm going to start doing it." You forget in a moment, and it's hard. I want changed people, and it takes time to change yourself, and it takes time to learn how to react to these situations in different ways. And so when you get the CDs, I want you to listen again and again and again and again and again and again. I want them daily, on listening to you on your iPod, in your car stereo, in the kitchen while you're cooking dinner. Listen again and again. Let your kids listen. And I promise, each time through, you'll hear a different layer of depth. Because at first you're going to be like, you know what, I just want a quick tool to help my kids, get them to stop whining and complaining all the time. Yep, I'll give you that. That's easy stuff. The first time you listen through, you'll get all the easy stuff, and you'll be like, oh, I like that choice ball idea. Oh, I like this way of handling their bedrooms. I like that. And then the second time you listen through, it'll go a level deeper, and it'll be like, oh, now I get why they're doing it. And the third time you go through, you'll be like, oh, so I really am the issue. I never realized I'm causing 85% of these power struggles myself. And so it's really kind of cool how that works. But no, I'm not going to let you borrow it, because I want you to listen again and again and again. And if you want dramatic changes, you have to take bold action. For preschoolers, got a question on preschoolers, and it says, hey, I can't talk and reason with my preschoolers, so how do we handle this with them? Well, the great thing, and the reason we have such great success, and I love working with preschool age kids, is they're like little sponges, and they mop up and soak up everything that you do. Not what you say, what you do. Your kids, any kid's age, but little kids, they pick up on your anxiety before you even know it. They know what mood you're in before you even know it. They can just feel it. And so, with a few quick things for preschoolers, and I can do more detail on this another time. Your modeling and what you do and show by your own behavior is huge. They're watching everything. Not what you say, but what you do. That's why sitting down when you're upset and when they're upset is so important. It just starts to take the fight away. It starts to take that anxiety away when you sit down. When you talk and modeling and showing them, you want to physically show them. When they get upset, instead of laying on the floor, pounding and throwing a tantrum, you want to, just a few words, say, hey, you know, follow me. Have them follow and go downstairs and jump on that mini trampoline. And so you start showing them. Well, you can either throw your physical meltdown and get really physically active that way, or when you're upset, we can come down and I'll do jumping jacks or jump on the mini trampoline with you. Watch your tone. You want to always keep an even, matter-of-fact tone with kids, especially preschool kids, any kids, when they're upset. Because when you add your emotion to it and you do the, oh, you know what, Jacob, when you feel that tone coming, that's like dumping gasoline onto the fire. So calm even. The tone has to be, you know what, I'm not moved by that. I've seen that, done that a million times myself. No big deal. I'm not moved by it. I praise kids in a calm, matter-of-fact tone. You know what? You've always been great at that. You've always been good working with younger kids. Casey, you know what? You've always been really good adding numbers in your head. You'll do great with that. If calm, even tone sends a message of confidence, and I really like that. So let's do this. May get to one more question. Next week, if you are in Michigan, we are all throughout Michigan in four different cities, Monday through Thursday. Invite your friends out to the workshops. We guarantee they will have a great time, and they will be blown away by this. It's really fun. After that, we're in Louisville, Kentucky, and then eastern part of Kentucky. We have an opening. If you're in Lexington, Kentucky, which I love, beautiful place, but we've never done a workshop there. If you're there and you're listening, email us really quickly about that. In May, we're going to be in D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, New York, Long Island, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts. If you are in those areas, we have a couple open dates on that trip that you can fill in. And it's easy. You just email or call us. We're so easy to work with. Anyway, I want to thank you for joining in. Remember, control yourself and nobody else. Enjoy your kids. Today when they come home from school, let me give you a couple other tips. When they come home from school, instead of asking them about how their day was or about their schoolwork, ask them about something interesting to them. Ask about their Legos, about Star Wars, about their Legos, about their video game. Or maybe talk to them and say, hey, you know what, today during the day I kind of had this issue come up, and I was wondering, you want to help me try to fix this or help me solve this? Get them using their problem-solving skills. It's really kind of cool. Mix up your afternoon routine. Go home and do a treasure hunt. Throw some things out in the yard. Go hide things somewhere in a local park and have your kids find it. Treasure hunts are kind of cool for kids and gets them moving. And by all means, laugh with your kids, enjoy them. We love you all and hope to see you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.